I'm Kevin Kunzman, Associate Editorial Director of medical news site HCP Live. Welcome to DocDoc. Welcome back to the flagship podcast series from medical news site HCP Live. If you're new to the show or our site, be sure to check us out at hcplive.com for all the news, interviews, and practice-changing insight you could use in medicine. You can also find us on X, formerly Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and you can register for our daily newsletter on our site to get the latest healthcare news right to your inbox. This week, our team is at the American College of Gastroenterology 2023 annual scientific meeting in Vancouver. Throughout a week of our new data reports and discussions in digestive, gastric, and hepatic disease, no topic is lesser known or underappreciated by our audience than our topic today, autoimmune liver disease. What follows is a conversation we had on site with Dr. Gina Choi, Associate Professor of Medicine and Surgery at UCLA. Dr. Choi's presentation at ACG this week regarded updates in the diagnosis and management of autoimmune hepatitis and overlap syndromes, a series of rare hepatic conditions with few modern treatment resources and limited diagnostic capabilities, but potentially deadly implications for patients all the same. We hope you find the interview insightful and helpful toward understanding a challenging rare disease in our communities today. Dr. Choi, like I alluded to, you know, there's a lot of vested interest in coming to better understand autoimmune hepatitis and in general autoimmune liver disease overlap syndromes with our audience. From what I currently understand, it's sort of limited in terms of our treatment options and strategies. There's some ambitions in improving diagnostics, but that really requires a greater embrace. I don't want to get too ahead of like what you'll be talking about in your session, but what are you sort of pinpointing as key highlights of here's where we're having difficulties and here's where we're having some wins? Could we start maybe at the difficulties? Can we talk some challenges that you see in the space?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think in terms of autoimmune hepatitis, it's important to remember that we're still using prednisone, which is the mainstay of treatment. And that's been the mainstay of treatment since the 1960s. Okay. In the early 2000s, with the introduction of budesonide, which is also a prednisone derivative with less side effects. And I think what's great is that in the new guidelines that just came out by the ASLD about 3 years ago, they've actually included budesonide to induce remission in patients with autoimmune hepatitis. So it's not just prednisone, but prednisone or budesonide plus a long-term immunosuppressive agent. I think what we're starting to see is that we're learning how to use our existing medications in different ways to treat the same disease. So also in terms of just what our treatment goal should be. So it, no matter the disease, whether it's hepatitis B, you know, we always try to think, what is our goal, AST and ALT? So now there's a lot of data coming out for autoimmune hepatitis that normalization should be your goal. So it's not good enough just to have an improvement in a liver test, you have to have a normalization. And it turns out that normalization is pretty hard. About 10 to 20% of people never get their liver test normal. The number could be 13% depending upon what literature you're reading. And that means that there isn't a 50% improvement in your liver test. And we know that improving your liver test is really the key to survival and to prevent liver transplantation.
And if you could help maybe set the stage additionally a little bit in terms of the demographics that we're seeing most frequently with patients with AIH, what exactly do they look like? What are they presenting?
Right, fantastic question. So I'm an adult hepatologist, and so I only see adults, but you can see it both in children and in adults. Traditionally, you think it's more women, but you can't be, just because you see a man doesn't mean it's not autoimmune hepatitis. So men can also present with autoimmune hepatitis. There are certain phenotypes associated with the disease. So we know that children who get it tend to have a more severe presentation. We know that people who are elderly have a less severe presentation, are more likely to respond to treatment. And also we know that there are different disparities in terms of ethnic representation, whether it's much more common in African Americans and Latinos and Asians than we think. So it's really important to recognize those people.
Excellent. Thank you so much for really highlighting that. And I guess that I imagine that that also feeds into some of the frustrations that we see in terms of screening capability diagnostics, right, as some difficulties patient by patient.
I think that's really, I mean, Kali Lai said it's men and women. But sure. If you have someone with autoimmune or, with abnormal liver tests, AST and ALT, then it's important to think about this diagnosis. And the diagnosis is pretty challenging. You know, the diagnosis is made based on serologic blood tests, for example, a positive ANA, a positive smooth muscle antibody, but that can also be positive in health, right? And 20% of people can have autoimmune hepatitis and have negative serologies, right? Just so that people can have positive serologies and not have the disease. I think the real unsung hero of autoimmune hepatitis is IgG in a non-cirrhotic patient.
Gotcha.
I think that can be elevated and really help them not only in making the diagnosis, but in following your treatment. You know, for example, if your AST and ALT are getting worse, but your IgG is getting better, then it kind of makes me think maybe a little bit test heartbeat abnormal from insufficient treatment. I think that in terms of the autoimmune space, there's a lot of great research going on, a lot of new things. You know, we talked about autoimmune hepatitis, but there's also primary biliary cholangitis.
Right.
A lot of new exciting data is coming out for that. And then the overlap syndrome, which my talk really talks about, but it's really two diseases that can present consecutively, present at the same time. Very challenging to treat.
Yeah.
But I think that's where the liver biopsy, a great hepatologist named Cynthia Levy once said, the autoimmune diseases will keep liver biopsy in business because that's when you really right. need it to help make the diagnosis, not only in making it, but how well you're doing in terms of a treatment as well.
So our gold biomarker is really IgG when we're...
Yeah, I mean, it's alphabet soup, actually. So
sure.
the ones we think about most are ANA, mm-hmm. Smooth muscle antibody, and mm-hmm. IgG, which actually isn't an autoimmune test, but certainly related to inflammation by T cells that are causing the damage in the liver.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. And if we could delve a little bit more into the overlap syndrome, as you were alluding to.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. So in terms of overlap, you know, I think in inflammatory bowel disease, you know, we think Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis.
Yeah.
In autoimmune disease, we think about autoimmune hepatitis, just more hepatocyte involved. And then primary biliary cholangitis, which is more bile duct involved.
Yeah.
But just like about IBD, I think there really is a spectrum of disease where you have autoimmune hepatitis on one side and you have PBC on the other. Now, there are other biliary diseases like PSC. So whenever I think about a Venn diagram, I think, you know, AIH, PBC, PSC. In adults, you don't really see autoimmune hepatitis in PSC. That's something that the pediatricians are more familiar with. But in adults, we absolutely do see autoimmune hepatitis and PBC. And so really, you have to kind of identify, like I said, sometimes it's sequential. You know, like let's pretend you have a patient with autoimmune hepatitis and all of a sudden their alkaline phosphatase goes up, which again is a biliary abnormality. And then you check in a new blood test, AMA, now it's positive, right? Mm-hmm. So do they actually have two diseases? I've actually never seen the trifecta, meaning all three in one patient.
Really?
I think that's the incorrect case report if we had that patient.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's always important to think about these other diseases and that, hey, it is a spectrum. They can happen at the same time. They can happen one after the other. And you really have to guide your treatment to the predominant disease.
And that's really interesting, too, because I know that what's emerging in a lot of our cholestatic disease management is the IBAT inhibitor drug class, right? We've been talking about that pretty frequently on our site as in some of the agents that's emerging. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like we're still trying to interpret the mechanism of action of exactly how it functions, but we understand the outcome of how it benefits things like pruritus, right? Which is,
right.
again, its own like mystery.
Right, exactly.
Symptom.
And it's funny because you talk about that mystery. I mean, you have some patients with PBC whose liver tests get better,
mm-hmm.
and the pruritus gets worse. They're not always parallel, and that's the classic teaching. You know, I think that... the reason why these diseases are so hard to treat is because we think of it as an immune dysregulation, right? And so at what point of the immune system do you target? And we have new therapies upcoming, none of them ready for prime time.
Sure.
So that's why we're still working with the prednisone, the azathioprine, the tacrolimus, the mycophenolate, things like that to help us kind of treat our patients.
Could you highlight some of the up-and-comers, ones that you'd rather highlight? Yeah, sure.
So in terms of the new kids on the block, for example, there are some B-cell activating factor inhibitors that are currently being studied. One of them is belimumab, which is a monoclonal antibody to VAFF.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is lanalumab, which is also a VAFF receptor inhibitor, which is kind of undergoing phase 3 trials right now for the treatment of refractory autoimmune hepatitis. So again, these aren't ready for prime time. These are certainly things that are hopefully coming down the pike. But I think this is very encouraging because, like I said, we're still using prednisone, which we discovered in the 1960s. And I think that it's harder to do these big studies. It's not like a patient with high cholesterol. We have hundreds and thousands of patients who have abnormal lipid panel. We're talking about a small group and most of them are women. So I think that not only is this a rare disease, but it's also a health disparity issue, right? Because most of the people who have this disease.
And we're historically challenged, of course, by getting better participation or, you know, involvement with women, right? In a lot of clinical trials too, which sort of adds to that.
And also I think, again, if it's a rare disease and women only make up 50% of the population,
right.
And so I think we're all thinking about, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we target diseases that impact certain ethnicities, certain genders? And so I think autoimmune hepatitis is very much one of those. I think as a female provider, mm-hmm. it kind of became my niche because I was the only female provider for a very long time.
Wow.
So that's kind of how I got really interested in this disease.
Wow. Yeah, out of necessity, but all the same, like, very vital that you're in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Regarding the BAFF receptor, if you're able to maybe talk about, I guess, its role in that, or why exactly those monoclonal antibodies that you highlighted?
Yeah, so basically this monoclonal antibody inhibits B-cell differentiation. And it is currently approved for other autoimmune diseases like lupus. But I think we're trying to extrapolate the successes in that immunologic field and to see if you can transcribe that to patients in autoimmune.
Okay, excellent. So we already have a pretty good clinical understanding of these agents and understanding exactly their role in immunomodulation.
Right, in other autoimmune liver. Other autoimmune diseases, not yet in the liver.
Excellent. Thank you so much for highlighting that. Are there any other drug classes or agents that you sort of see as...
People always ask me, you know, is there any role for infliximab or is there any... And I think that for that one, if you even look at the ASLD guidelines, the evidence suggests that it's not really highly recommended for second-line therapy. The other one is something called rituximab, which, you know, again, it's a really hardcore medication. But again, I think that there have been some case reports with success with that, but not yet widely recommended.
That's anecdotal.
I think it's still prednisone or budesonide, azathioprine to maintain remission. And if that doesn't work, then tacrolimus or mycophenolate, which is kind of the two things that we use as second-line agent. And after that, you know, you really need to go to someone who's a specialist to figure out if you're eligible for any of these type of trials.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that, Dr. Choi. Anything else that you want to highlight from your session in terms of, like, you know, I think it's something that was interesting that we heard from someone else was sort of like a wish list of ambitions that you'd like to see if, you know, let's say we were reconnecting at ACG 24 and it was like, we have big news in autoimmune hepatitis or liver disease. Like, what would you want it to be? What would be, I guess, a great capstone for us to reach next? Because there's a lot of opportunities,
I think I have two responses to that. The first is, you know, I think we have to understand that there are many faces to the clinical presentation of autoimmune hepatitis. It could present very subtly, abnormal liver tests in a totally healthy person, or it could present as acute liver failure and even transplantation. I think that our goal really should be, if you're at all confused about what's happening, but we're not responding, you need to do a liver biopsy. And then also, and finally, your goal should be to aim for normalization of your AST and ANC. I think in terms of where I see ourselves in 10 years, you know, I think that prednisone is like a big blanket, you know. I think that it's not very, it's kind of a blunt instrument, so to speak. It works, but it's not very precise. Yeah. And there are a lot of side effects associated with it. So the fact that that's still the backbone of our treatment, I wish that there is a way that we can somehow avoid using that and that we could jump to therapies that are more targeted to the individual patient and not use this, you know, kitchen sink or one shoe fits all type of
approach. We're hammering in screws, so to speak.
Exactly.
We need a screwdriver. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, and I also think that diagnosis is tricky too. You know, I keep saying that liver biopsy will keep autoimmune hepatitis in business, but it's one of the few things that we still want to do a liver biopsy for. The hepatology, there's a field is moving away from biopsy and going more towards non-invasive markers, non-invasive tests. So, you know, we know that there are certain genetic predispositions to autoimmune hepatitis. Can we identify ways that we can make the diagnosis? So, you know, I'm telling you, to make the diagnosis, you need, you know, 3 positive blood tests, exclude everything else, and there you go, you know, and that's not very precise.
Yeah.
So there could be a way that we can make the diagnosis. And clinicians tell me all the time that it's a tough diagnosis to make. It's
sure.
very elusive. It's not an easy diagnosis, especially autoimmune hepatitis. So I think being able to do that would be certainly one of the goals for the next 10 years.
Maybe perhaps that sounds like it feeds in a little bit of putting the onus on educating the frontline clinicians as well
yeah.
to make the adequate referral.
Yeah, you know, I think that when people see abnormal liver disease, common things being common, they think it's metabolic or mast cell, the new name mast cell. But, you know, if you have a woman, you know, and then again, women get pregnant, you know, this disease can flare after pregnancy. You really have to keep it on the forefront of your mind.
Thanks again to Dr. Choi for her time and valuable expertise in autoimmune liver disease. For the rest of our ACG interviews and live reporting, you can visit us at hcplive.com. And again, be sure to follow us on X, LinkedIn, Facebook, and give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast platform. From HCP Live, I'm Kevin Kunzman. Thanks for listening to Doc Talk.